It leads to health problems, and that means to say, you know, we're very focused on balance, and also Chinese herb also very focused on balance between yin and yang, you know, yang and yin, you know, and maybe it is a jargon, you know. Yang means the function of the organs. The yin is a substance of the organs, you know. That means to say, if the body in good shape means then they should have perfect harmony. Some people right now, the modern people have so many anxiety and some mental problems. That's because the mental activities has been abused, you know, too much. And that relates to the physical problems, you know.
What is your personal philosophy behind good health?
To be honest, it's at least 60% belong to the philosophy of Taoism and 40% derived from Confucianism and Buddhism, you know, because I'm quite Chinese orientated, you know.
How does Chinese herbal medicine work to treat the body?
The Chinese herbs really treat the bodies. Why? It focuses on the root cause other than the symptoms. That means to say, we focus on the holistic healing, you know. And by holistic meanings, we focus on prevention is better than cure. We also very focus on healthy lifestyle as well, you know.
In your opinion, what are the main factors in our society that cause illnesses?
As far as I know, in this modern society, you know, the common health problem is caused by one word, is pollution. From my understanding, pollution consists of different pollutions. The first of all is the food pollution, you know. Secondly is the air pollution. The third is the water pollution. The fourth is sound pollution. And finally is the spirit pollution. Just these five pollutions that really hurt our health, you know. And if you can get rid of this pollution, then I'm sure that you are absolutely disease-free.
How well established is Chinese medicine in Vancouver as a field and culture?
You know, as a result of the opening policy of China, particularly lately, you know, there are many people try to develop an interest in, you know, learning about the Chinese herbal medicine. But of course, there are rooms for developing, you know.
Do all the herbal stores in Vancouver know of each other? Which is to say, is there a network connecting every major herbal store?
In general, we have a mutually connective network, you know. We also share our updates, knowledge from every now and then through a regular meeting or assembly and conference, you know.
Do you feel that Vancouver has a strong Chinese medicine community?
I can tell, you know, there are new signs of improving. Why? Because many of customers from the mainstream look for some herbal supplements and look for some herbal knowledge, you know. It is a good sign.
What do you think is the future of the Chinese medicine community in Vancouver?
Oh, I'm sure that as the people are more open-minded, they are more eager to look for alternative medical treatments. I'm sure that Chinese herbal medicines will definitely have a good signs of growth, you know.
In your opinion, what could strengthen the local Chinese medicine community?
I would inclined to suggest to do some more educational activities and do some campaign or something like that in order to alert the community of our Chinese medicine, you know.
Can you tell me more about how the local people in Hong Kong and China view Chinese medicine? Is it a common part of their lives?
Oh, yeah, they receive the Chinese herbal medicines as one of their lifestyle, you know, because they think that Chinese herbal has no side effect whatsoever.
Has the public view of traditional Chinese medicine changed over the last 20 years in Vancouver?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My field experience has tend to convince me that there are significant change over the last 20 years. Why? Because many new customers making a herbal inquiry, they are eager to seek some herbal information, you know, updates, you know, So that my understanding that in near future, many people will look for the Chinese herbal medicine. You know.
How open are local Canadians to traditional Chinese medicine, do you find?
They are quite open-minded, but of course, you take certain period of time in order to fully develop their knowledge. But in general, as compared with 20 years ago, it's better now, you know, better. They are more open-minded. They are not so biased to the Chinese medicine, you know.
Is there anything you want to say to our listeners?
Oh, I see. You know, thank you for allowing me to say a few words. Why? Because right now I'm 68 years old, you know. My spice of life to be shared with you as far as possible, you know, try some Chinese herbal medicines as a try and see. And also, one piece of advice for you guys, try to have a regular lifestyle because apart from the food you eat, you know, a healthy lifestyle has also a very significant impact on health as well, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
That was an interview with Raymond Fan, a herbalist and ex-business owner of herbal store Bun Chou Tong. We talked about the Taoist roots of Chinese medicine, his life as a herbalist, and the history of Bun Chou Tong.
About up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
With frightening clown sightings sweeping social media and terrorizing high school students and communities across North America, it is good to remember that clowns have always been with us and can be found in one form or another in every culture. Julia Lane is a clown and is doing her PhD in education at SFU on clowning. There's a lot more to clowning and the rich traditions and practice of clowning than just scaring us or making us laugh. So I'm here with Julia Lane, and you're doing graduate work on clowning.
Yep, I am.
So clowns and clowning aren't exactly what I think most people think of when they think of academia and you know, high-level research. How does clowning fit into what you're doing?
Well, the approach to clowning that I have taken and the way that my training, my clown training as a performer has gone, is that clowning really draws on who you are as a person. So part of who I am as a person is a scholar, and part of who I am as a person is clown. And your approach to clowning can come from anything. So might not be the first thing you think of when you think of academia, might not be the first thing you think of when you think of even stage performance, might not be the first thing you think of when you think of teaching, but it can fit in any of those places. And that's a big part of what my research is about, is looking at this particular approach to clowning and what we can pull out of it as applications for other places in life and other kinds of work and other kinds of thought processes.
So I think probably most people would think of clowning as something primarily as a kind of performance. Mm-hmm. But is there more to it than that?
Yes and no. So the training that I've done, clowns exist in nearly every human culture in nearly every era. Something that can be called clown. Whether or not it should rightfully be called clown is another question, but some kind of clown-esque tradition exists across all of these times and places. So it's very hard to be specific about what we mean when we talk about it. So in order to get specific right now, what I will focus on is the training I've done, which is a performance training.
Right.
It is primarily oriented towards performance on stage. However, there are aspects of that approach to clowning that I really believe can be drawn out and applied to so many other different pursuits and so many other different ideas, because it really is about discovering something in yourself and celebrating it and bringing it forward and being honest about those things. One of the rules of clown is be honest. So that is part of what I think can be applied in the academic context, even though it does come from a performance tradition.
So can you give me an example of that?
Absolutely. One example, the first one that comes to my mind, is another one of the rules of clowning is follow the impulse.
Right.
So often in the academic context, often in the teaching context, we think about the plans that we make. What's the curriculum? What's the thing I have to teach today? What's the thing I have to do? What's the proposal for my research? How do I make sure I'm meeting these milestones? It's all about the planning. And maybe this is why people don't think of clowning when they think of academia, because they think of academia as something very serious and structured. But that's only one way of doing academia, and other ways of doing academia abound, and we can follow our impulse when we teach. We can follow our impulse when we write. We can follow our impulse when we research, and we do all the time. People have to.
Yeah.
So part of my work is really just saying, look, here's these things we already do. This just gives us another language to talk about it and to really celebrate it as one of the ways that we actually already operate in the academy.
Right. So I guess one of the things that people, I think the popular conception from what you would see on TV or movies or some other forms of media, is that clowning is just sort of silly and frivolous and fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there are really, I mean, the way you approach clowning, that's kind of a misconception. And there are a lot of misconceptions about what clowning is.
Yeah, so there are, in some ways you could call them misconceptions. You could also just call them conceptions. And again, the multiplicity of what it means to clown, what clowns are, means that, you know, yes, clown is silly. Yes, clown can be frivolous. Yes, clown can be serious. Yes, clown can be tragic. Yes, 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 yes. The clown can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bound. And this is one of the major parts of my research, is about where the clown can allow us to be unbounded. We are bound in our daily lives by rules and traditions and norms and laws. And those things are good and important. And I'm not saying we should get rid of them. But the clown, one of the things that often transcends across all of these different traditions of clown is that the clown is the figure that can loosen those reins a bit, that right. can play, that can get silly. And sometimes that silliness is incredibly serious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're being silly on the surface and they're making jokes and they're falling over and they're, you know, but clowning has started revolutions. It's been incredibly integral to revolutions in the Russian context,
right.
and in other places in the world. So, don't be fooled by the silliness, I guess is what I would say, is that one of the things that clowns try to challenge us to see is that silly and serious are not opposites. They exist mm-hmm. on a continuum together and they inform one another.
So how does clowning transform the superficial silliness into that deeper meaning or exploration, or how does it do that?
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I'll just say that right now.
That's not what it's all about.
Sometimes it doesn't. You know, a lot of people, the first thing that they'll think of when they think of the clown is like the circus clown, the birthday party clown, the clown magician hybrid who's there to entertain children and pull, you know, colored scarves out of their sleeves and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, is there a lot of deeper meaning there? Maybe some people find it. That's not really what my focus is on.
Yeah.
But often the clowning that I work with and look at is they're really taking the context of our society, the context of our cultures, the context of what it means to be human, what it means to be human and fail at stuff, what it means to be human and not be good at things, what it means to be human and get slapped in the face by the person that you love, you know, and all these really important moments or things that we are so habituated to in our day-to-day lives that we can't even see anymore.
Right.
Like how ludicrous some of the rules that we follow are. The clown is the like sociologist of our lives all the time, looking for these things where we go, whoa, wait, why have we all just accepted this? This is weird. This is crazy. And then make silliness out of it so that we can laugh. And in laughing, we then go, oh, wait a second. You're right. Like, whereas if they got up on a soapbox and said to us, don't you know that you're being ridiculous and blah, 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 our reaction might be, oh, stop preaching at me. I don't want to hear it, because we have enough of that in our lives. People telling us what to think and what to do. One of the key things for me about clowns is that, or at least the approach to clown that I take, is that it doesn't tell you what to do, doesn't tell you what to think. It says, here's some stuff. Here's some possibilities. I want to open up possibilities for different kinds of thinking, for creativity. And humor and silliness are really, they rely on creativity. We cannot have them without being creative. And that, for me, is at the core of what the clown does.
So you talk a bit, you use the term clowning as a scholarly methodology and about being a clown scholar. So what do you mean by that? And how does that translate into what you'll be doing in your research?
Yeah, so this really came out of the research that I was doing, where I was noticing that what existed...
What research was that?
Well, just in working on my dissertation, okay. reading books that existed
right.
about clown, finding what was already, you know, doing that survey of the landscape, what's yeah. already here.
Yeah.
And what I found in that was that there was a lot of stuff from an anthropological perspective, where it's like the clowns of this culture, and it was still very... very academic, very
right.
scholarly, very like, we can talk about these kinds of humor that they use. We can categorize those.
Right.
And it was, you know, somewhat clinical, in a certain kind of way. It was really taking the creativity out of it and saying, we can just take the methodologies that we already have and apply them to this subject matter of clown.
Right.
And I was like, okay, that's fine. That's interesting. But that's not what I want to do at all.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to do is be a clown. I want to be a clown. I want to be a performer. I want to clown my dissertation. I want to, you know, take what I know from that realm and have it really impact. Because I think that that's what clowns want to do, is they want to transgress those boundaries. And they want to say, okay, well, now I'm a clown in the academy. How do I do that? I want my methodology to be informed by my subject matter. So I don't want to be a scholar of clown who just writes about clown as as a scholar in the ways that scholars have always written about other things. I want to say, okay, as a clown coming into the academy, how does that shift the way that I can do my work? How does that shift the way I research? How does that shift the way I write? How does that shift the way I think? And there was a second part to your question that I've forgotten now, but that's how I understand being a clown scholar as opposed to being a scholar of clown.
I guess it was just about the scholarly methodology.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so taking, so then not just applying a methodology that's already, that can just go for any kind of thing, but really saying, okay, so as a clown, what does that tell me? What do the rules of the training that I've done, which rules is in scare quotes, which you can't see over the radio, but, you know, what are the rules of clowning? What is this tradition, what does this performance idea give me as a way to approach my work, as opposed to just going, well, here's some approach that someone else came up with, and I'll just apply that to writing up a survey of clowns.
Okay, you also talk about clowning and education, and I gather you've done some educating as a clown?
Yeah, in a few ways. Yeah. One of them being that everything I do as a clown, because that's who I am. So doing this interview as a clown right now. I don't know if you noticed, but this is me clowning.
Excellent.
Oh my goodness. Everybody's freaking out now. it's not scary. It's okay. But, yeah, so I've done that, but I've definitely thought about how, in my teaching and in workshops that I've given, how, same kind of thing, how the approach that I understand from how I perform, follow the impulse, be honest, break the rules is a rule of clown, break the rules is a rule. How do those things give me material from which to teach, from which to take any subject matter and go, okay, how am I going to follow the impulse around this when I get in the classroom? How am I going to listen to my students and then surprise them and surprise myself and let them surprise me? So those active kinds of questioning about, you know, this as a way of approaching things is absolutely what I do always.
Right.
Yeah.
So one other thing I wanted to touch on, and it's significant enough to be in your working title or subtitle, is the concept of ethical transgression in clowning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I became super fascinated by ethics when I was writing my comprehensive exams, and I actually started on a bit of a possibly red herring path of researching a bunch of Emmanuel Levinas's philosophy of ethics, which was very interesting because he talks about the face and the encounter with the face, and it's very metaphorical and French and philosophical and all that stuff. But part of why I became really interested in that is that the training tradition that I've done involves creating masks, and that's how you come to your clown, is through making masks and masking. But there are masks that are intended to reveal something about you, not to hide something about you. So that's quite a shift in the thinking about masks. So I thought, okay, face mask, I'm interested, let's see what happens here. But really what I could have written a dissertation about clowning and Levinasian ethics, but I'm not doing that. Yeah. But what's come out of that is that a lot of the scholarship that exists about clown talks about whether clown is subversive. Does it challenge our culture? Does it subvert our norms and our expectations? Or is it conservative? Does it show us the rule in order to make us see that when you break the rules, you get a pie in the face, and so everyone should really just obey? And there's really, you know, compelling discussions about both of those things. I argue that clowning is transgressive. It transgresses the boundaries. It tests the waters. It puts its toe on the line and then jumps over it a little bit and then jumps back. It's not subversive or conservative. It doesn't try to be either of those things at its core from the approach that I take to it. But it opens up the possibility that we might be, as the audience. We might see it and choose to subvert things, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot. We might see it and choose to go, no, that's a good rule. We should keep that rule. That rule keeps us safe. Yeah. So it gives us that possibility, that suggestion, rather than doing anything itself and saying, this is how you should be. And in that transgressiveness, I think there is a real, really important idea about ethics, about how we operate with each other, about how we create possibilities for each other. And I just think that ethics is a really interesting concept to apply to clowns who are often very like, violent in their performances, often very rude, whatever, lewd and rude and crude and all of those rhyming words in their performances, because ethics is not something that you would think of when you think of clown. But I do think that in opening up those possibilities, there's something about ethics and an ethical relationship that is created with the audience, because the clown is also oriented towards the audience, listening to the audience, having whatever the audience's reactions are change what they're doing. And that's an ethical relationship that exists. So that's a whole other area that I'm playing around with and curious about, and maybe it'll be my first book.
Excellent. So how did you get into clowning in the first place? What drew you to it?
I don't have a very good answer to that. Well, I do and I don't. I got into clowning because I just couldn't not get into clowning. Somehow there was something in me that I was like, that's a thing I have to do. But right before I started my undergrad, I went to an improv camp in Regina, Saskatchewan. And there was a man there and he did a half day workshop on clown. And I went outside and put on the red nose and put on a hat and came in. And the instruction was to just connect with every person in the room. So I was doing that and big smile on my face, and he came up to me and he said, "You have a beautiful smile, but you're hiding behind it." And I cried for the rest of the day. I wasn't particularly sad at a certain point, but I just could not, like, it was just water. It was like someone had turned on the faucet in my eyes, and I could not stop crying. And he said to me, "When I was clowning, I cried for a year. So when I was doing the clown training, I cried for a year. So don't feel bad." And I was like, there's something here that I have to do more of, because it's insane and I don't understand it. And so then at the end of my undergraduate degree, I took myself to the clown farm on Manitoulin Island, which is now called the Manitoulin Conservatory for Creation and Performance, and did Baby Clown with John Turner, who is one of the more famous clowns in Canada. He performs with Mump and Smoot, and he's my clown dad. And did his workshop and just have not been able to stop ever since. And I don't know if it's the fact that my great-grandfather was a hobo clown, or what there is there that was calling to me, but there was definitely something that I was just like, it was never even a question in my mind. I was like, I'm just gonna go to the clown farm. That's the thing I have to do now. So yeah.
Do you have a particular character you use, or many?
Kind of a complicated question, even though it seems simple. John Turner would say, how many actors do you have? You are one actor. So you are one clown. You don't Right. have multiple clowns. Just as you are one actor. But the clown can play multiple characters, just like the actor can play multiple characters. So, I absolutely play many different characters for many different pieces. I have one sort of core clown character that I use a lot that is named Murgatroy. My great-grandfather was Aloysius Murgatroy as a clown, so I'm Murgatroy. But every time you put on the red nose, or every time you go to clown, it's different, even if you think it's going to be the same.
Now, you alluded to this a little bit earlier when you were talking. When you go to do your defense, mm-hmm. are you going to be in costume? And
I don't know. When I did my comprehensive exams, I wrote two papers and did a performance, which I did wear the red nose for that performance, and I was in costume, and I was absolutely a character, and I was actually a really fun character to be. And I may do that for my defense. I think at least part of my defense will involve that. Whether the whole thing will be that, I don't know, but whether or not I am in costume, I will absolutely be clowning.
And do you have a good idea of what you're going to be writing yet, or is it still there's an exploration to go yet?
Well, it's always an exploration.
Because you're sort of at the point of proposing your topic at this point, right?
I'm at the point of writing now, okay. Yeah. But it's always an exploration in writing at this point, right. Which is totally in keeping with my methodology that I write, and as I write, I follow the impulse and I figure things out and I go, oh, now this is this part and all that jazz. It's absolutely a performance of writing. But part of my current idea is that I'm going to be taking aspects of the choose your own adventure novel genre mm-hmm. and writing my dissertation in that way.
Well, I look forward to reading it. We'll have to have you back when you're closer to being finished.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you.
Julia Lane is a clown who's doing her PhD at Simon Fraser University on clowns and clowning. She was speaking with CJSF Radio's Magnus Tewald.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.